was. But we call in our house a temper tantrum. I have three young boys, and we have temper tantrums all the time. That's pretty mild. If you're thinking about having kids, that's nothing. We get temper tantrums that range from slamming doors to hitting and pushing and throwing ourselves on the floor and crying, and that's just Jennifer and I. We see temper tantrums all the time. It's just a normal part of life. I need to tell you, my wife said, make sure you tell the people that he's usually a really happy kid. It took me 4 days of hunting him down, trying to get him to cry for me. That's been my week this week, hunting down my 11-year-old, trying to get him to cry. This morning, we're continuing in the series, Breaking the Habits That Hold You Back, and we're talking about taming our tempers. Now, I don't think most of us in this room stand on our beds, jump up and down, and cry when we don't get our way. I don't think that's exactly how it works. But the truth is that every single one of us, at some point in our lives, in some situation, we've lost our cool. We've lost our temper. We've blown up. We don't even know how to explain it. After it happens, we look back and we say, I don't know. That was out of character for me. I don't understand why I just totally blew up like that. People attribute this to all kinds of things. Some people are like, it's just no big deal. It's who I am. Some people attribute it to having red hair. I don't know why. But if you're a redhead in here this morning, isn't it true? People come up to you, strangers probably, and will make comments about your temper without knowing you at all. Or maybe your last name is O'Shaughnessy or O'Malley or O'Sullivan. And because you're Irish, people think that you have a temper that we don't have. But the truth is, every single one of us has a temper, and it really only comes from one place. It doesn't matter what our hair color is or what our nationality is. Temper comes from the overflow of anger in our hearts. And as we talk about temper this morning, what we're talking about really is the buildup of anger in my life. I like to think of anger and temper as like a volcano. It's just like pressure building up inside of me. And when I explode in a temper, when I have a temper tantrum, when I just yell or throw stuff or hit stuff, the idea is that what it is it's just there's a lot of anger buildup and it has to go somewhere. Just like a volcano builds up pressure and eventually that volcano has to go somewhere. Anger builds up. And then I have to explode. And I want to call that this morning as we move through our time together, our anger threshold. And the question this morning is, what's your anger threshold? How much anger is inside of you? How much of that raw material of anger is just building up inside of you? For me, the thing that sets it off pretty easily, I'm ashamed to say, is my kids. I said three young boys, 6'5", and almost one there. And I'm sorry, 6'4", and almost one. And it's real easy for me to get upset at them and to yell at them. And I don't like that about me, but I'm starting to work on some of that. For you, it may be something different. You may come home from work every day, and you may find yourself, your anger threshold is just up. I mean, you're feeling agitated. And then you get in your car, and you get on the interstate, and you're zipping along at 65. And then you come up on that person who, when they look at the speed limit out on the interstate, they follow the bottom number. You know, the minimum. And so they're going 45, and next to them is the person going 46, and they're doing this number on the interstate, one in front of the other, and then this way. And so you're changing lanes back and forth. You're trying to figure out how to get around these two. Who knows where these people come from that drive 45 on the interstate? So you're switching lanes back and forth. You're doing everything. You're being a decent enough person. You're riding their bumper. You're letting them know your displeasure. You can feel the sweat rising. You're muttering. You're calling them names. You're calling them idiots. You're calling them slowpokes, whatever, telling them that the gas pedal's on the right side of the car. And you're doing all that stuff. Maybe even you're flashing your lights. You're letting them know that your level, your anger threshold is up. And then comes your break. You get that moment where you can finally pass them. And so you whip out in the other lane and you go by and you don't know exactly why you do this. You're not this kind of person. But as you're going by, you feel the need to tell them that they're number one. Or something real close to that. And you get further down the road and you just think, why did I do that? Some of us this morning, the anger that builds up in our lives is a lot deeper and it's a lot darker. And it's stuff that we've been carrying around for a very, very long time. And so this morning, we're going to talk about lowering our anger threshold, dealing with our anger in significant ways. But before we do that, we have another song still and announcements and stuff. And so I just wanted to come out and give you like a working definition this morning of what anger is that we're going to work with this morning. So what I want you to do is I just want you to look up at the side screens. We're going to put a definition of anger up there for you to read and that you can see. Okay, that's not going to work. Apparently, the screens aren't working, so I'll just tell you. What the heck? God, I'm trying to talk right here, right now. All right, so I was at anger is the feeling I get inside. Well, have you thought about the definition a little bit? I said a couple minutes ago that when we are talking about taming our temper, what we're really talking about is lowering the anger threshold in our lives that we carry with us all the time. But I want to take it just a step further. Andy Stanley, in his book, It Came From Within, which I used as a source for a lot of stuff as I was writing this message, he says that anger just isn't that feeling when things aren't going my way. That's the beginning of it. But what it really is he talks about this next feeling, which is when that person owes me. That you owe me. Not only am I not getting my way, but you owe me because of whatever you're doing that I don't get my way. See, this is the stuff that anger is really made of. Anger is the feeling that you owe me because of what you did, and it might just be a little thing, but it starts to grow inside of us. And we start to play with it and to let it grow, and it's growing. We don't know how to slow it down. So just for a couple minutes this morning, I want to flesh this idea out just a little bit, help you with the definition, because you may be sitting there a little skeptical. And so just a couple minutes, I want to talk about this idea that you owe me. And I want to start with myself talking about anger at inanimate objects. Now, as far as anger goes, this is pretty low threshold kind of stuff. It's not super intense. It can be resolved pretty quickly. And it doesn't consume us like some of the anger that we're going to talk about in a little bit. But I want to talk about the definition in terms of anger at inanimate objects. This here is a Rubik's Cube. It came out in the 80s. They say that it's solvable. They say that you can solve this if you work at it enough. I read on the packaging the other day that there are like 4 quintillion possibilities for how the squares could be arranged. The engineers I know just whipped out their calculators in their pockets and just started figuring that out. If I'm wrong, sorry. And they say that it can be solved. I'm just curious this morning as I look across the crowd, is there anybody here that can actually solve this? Anyone? I'll just tell you, last night we had a guy, Andrew, can you? Want to give it a shot? Not now. We had a guy last night do it in 9.5 minutes. He just cranked it out. And then like a couple minutes later, so anybody want to give it a shot? Anyone? Anyone? All right. Not going to force you. Okay. That's fine. I tried. As a kid, I tried to do this thing. And I'd work at it and work at it and spend a lot of time. Actually, I built myself up and I could get one side. Thought that was pretty cool. And then at some point, I remember I got 2 sides. That's my personal best. I got up to 2 sides on the Rubik's Cube and figured out how to get 2 sides of it solved. And so eventually I got that all figured out, and that's good. But I remember as a kid working on this thing, and it was just really frustrating me. I would get really frustrated by it, and I could remember like that slow burn, like that slow feeling of this thing's really starting to tick me off. And the reason is because I think that I like to do puzzles. I like to do Sudoku. I like to do crossword puzzles. I like to do that kind of stuff. And the reason is I like the satisfaction when it's done. There's nothing better than looking at the New York Times crossword puzzle and all the squares are filled in, even if you have to cheat by going to the next page. There's nothing more satisfying than looking at the Sudoku puzzle you've worked on and, you know, getting all the numbers filled in. I enjoy that. And I feel like this thing that I paid for owes me a certain level of satisfaction. I'm not getting my way with it. I'm not getting it solved, and it's not making me happy. And on top of that, I feel like it owes me, because it owes me the satisfaction of getting it done. See, we feel like that with all kinds of things. We feel that way with our computers, don't we? Anybody feel any anger at the inanimate object that sits on your desk? We feel like it owes us some productivity. You ever had those days where you feel like you went into work and messed with your computer all day? Got nothing done. We feel like it owes us some productivity, and it's not going our way, and we feel like it owes us. I have figured out there is a way to get satisfaction and get what I'm looking for out of at least some measure of satisfaction out of a Rubik's Cube. You take it like this, and you set it there, and then you grab one of these. It may not get solved, but at least I feel better about it. Last night, I did this, and I swung with all my might, and there was pieces of Rubik's Cube in that section and in that section. It spread all over the room, so I'm just going to tell you people in front, watch out just a little bit. For me to get satisfaction from a Rubik's Cube, that will do. Inanimate objects, I can really let it go. I feel so much better seeing that thing in pieces. I get to do it one more time this morning. Awesome. But anger and feeling angry towards a Rubik's Cube or your computer, or I just got to tell you this morning, so I'm talking about anger this weekend, and I go out to warm up my car before I eat my bowl of cereal. That's my routine. Go out, start the car, eat my bowl of cereal, finish getting ready, get in the car and leave. And my car wouldn't start. I mean, just turn it and turn and turn and turn. It wouldn't start. And I find myself like getting angry at my car and going, whoa, dude, you're talking about anger this morning. Chill out. Thanks to my good neighbor who loaned me his truck and I got here this morning. But anger at an inanimate object isn't such a big deal all by itself. I mean, it's high. If your anger threshold's building up, it's a big deal. But really, inanimate objects, we can let it go. I like to work with wood. I like to build stuff. You know, I get angry at wood all the time, you know, and it's usually, you know, pretty simply resolved. You know, get out the sledgehammer and everything's all better. But it's a bigger deal. Anger's a bigger deal when we start talking about anger at people in our lives that we deal with every day. When the object of my anger and that anger that's growing inside of me is somebody I work with or my kids or my spouse or my boss or family members, it's a little harder to deal with, and it's not so easily resolved. Here's just some quick examples. Parents, you know this feeling when your kids disobey you and they've made a mess of the house, and you're asking them to clean it up, and they're not. Instead, they're running naked through the house wet and making more mess, and you're thinking to yourself, I should have had puppies. You know this feeling, and the idea here is that you're not getting your way. And you feel like these kids owe you. They owe you some respect. They owe you their obedience. I mean, that's just right. They owe you those things. And so it's real easy to get all mad and to yell and to throw stuff or to hit stuff and to say damaging things that are damaging to our kids. Bosses, you know this feeling about you've had this employee and you've tried and tried and tried to be patient and you've tried to explain over and over again that performance isn't what it is and you're not getting your way because no matter how many times you've had the conversation, it's just not happening and you're starting to feel some anger. And it's not just that you're not getting away, you're not getting your way, you're starting to feel like you're owed some of the paycheck back, frankly. Or you feel like you're owed some more time, or you feel like you're owed your time that you've wasted or spent on this employee, and you can feel the anger growing inside of you. Let's just turn it around. Employees, you felt the same way. You get there early at work in the morning. You work late. You work through your lunch. You do everything you can. You do everything to sacrifice for this company, and then paycheck time comes, or pay raise time comes, and it's a joke. And you feel like you're not getting your way. And you feel like this company owes you something, owes you some of your life back, or owes you some more money, or owes you whatever it is, some respect. And it gets harder to deal with. So anger against other people can start infecting us and starts raising that anger threshold in us. But I believe that there's another kind of anger that's much deeper and much more damaging and much more likely to keep our anger threshold high. It's anger that is really deep-seated. We've had it for a very long time. I call it historical anger, and I don't mean that you're angry about the Revolutionary War. If you're angry about the Revolutionary War, you're a bookish nerd, and you need to stop. What I'm talking about is those instances in our lives where we can quickly think back and remember all the things that these people did wrong to me. Maybe it's something back to your child, something's childhood, something somebody said or something someone did. And they hurt you. They damaged you, and it stuck for a long time. And truth is, if you get real quiet and you think about it for just a couple minutes, you can remember exactly what it was like that day when they said that thing. You can remember the temperature that day when that person did that thing to you. And it's caused anger in your life because you didn't get your way. Your life didn't go the way you wanted to. Somebody owes you something. They owe you a childhood back. They owe you back your confidence. They owe you back your innocence. Maybe somebody owes you back the dreams you once had. I was in the car yesterday listening to NPR and a radio program they have in the afternoon is called My American Story. And the idea of a My American Story is just everyday Americans tell stories and they record them and they play them back. And they were telling this story. A guy that owns a funeral home or works in a funeral home was talking about a gentleman who came in, an older gentleman, who came in to buy a tombstone for himself. And he didn't want your average run-of-the-mill, you know, normal-sized tombstones. He wanted, like, a monument, a big one, you know, the six-footers. And so the funeral home director asked him what he wanted on it, and he started by saying, well, I'd like my picture on it, and I'd like the year I was born, the year I died. That's fine. That's normal. He says, what else? He goes, I'd like the picture of my three sons on my marker, and I'd like the years that they were born and the years that they died. The funeral home director says, hey, I'm really sorry. It must be really hard to have survived your three sons. That must have been a very difficult stretch of life for you. And he says, oh, they're not dead yet. And the funeral home director gets real nervous at this point because he's not sure that the guy's not giving him subtle clues that he's going to kill his own kids, his own grown sons. So he starts asking questions like, what's going on? Why are you saying this and all this stuff? And the guy began to describe how his three sons had swindled him out of some money years ago. And how for some, he didn't get into all the details, but there was a business deal or something, and they basically sold out their dad for the money. And he says, the date that you're putting on my tombstone is the date that my sons became dead to me. And so somewhere in America today, there sits a tombstone, a big monument type, has four pictures of it, of a man who really someday is going to die of a broken heart, and his three sons who broke his heart. And I wish I'd remembered the epitaph. I was driving, so I couldn't write it down, but it was something to the effect of, you marked my heart over money. A guy who wasn't getting his way. Not even close. I mean, I bet his dreams for his life would have been that as he grew older, he'd had a great relationship with his boys and their kids, and the dream that many of us have for us and our children. And yet, he's saying, look, my life has been so ruined. My last act in this life is going to be to erect a tombstone to point out the hurt that I feel. And how I feel that my sons owe me. They owe me money. But I think more importantly to this guy, they owed him a relationship. And see, that's the critical thing about anger, is anger just isn't that I don't get my way. And it's not just that you owe me, but anger is a response to hurt. See, angry people are hurt people. I don't like to admit that. I want to say that my anger is justified and I have every reason to be angry. But particularly when we're talking about this deep-seated, historical type of anger, the anger I feel is often a response to hurt feelings that I've nursed. So in my life and in my hurt, I act upon that anger. I act upon that hurt. I don't know if I was a kid and I grew up and there was woods in the back. And, you know, I think that part of growing up for every young boy, I'm not saying it's right, is to torture animals. And if you want to get an animal really upset, if you want to get the cat in the neighborhood really fired up, what do? You hurt it. So you do things like put firecrackers on their tails or whatever it is that you did as a young boy. I didn't do that one. I know people who did. Whatever it is, because we know that anger comes from feeling hurt. So here's the idea this morning. We all have hurts. Every single one of us in this room has the potential to be very, very angry. don't think that because you're Irish or because you're red hair, you're more prone to be angry. The truth is, all of us have hurts in our lives. All of us have things that have wounded us. And we have the possibility, if we allow those things to fester, that we can become very angry. And anger can build up in our lives, and pretty soon we find ourselves blowing our temper all over the place. Some of us blow our temper a little bit different than others. Some of us are loud, and we just blow it in outward ways. We yell, we throw stuff, we break stuff. We think if we can just express our anger, if we can let off enough steam, we can manage it. We can manage our hurts. We can manage the anger in our life if we just let it out. In China, I read an article the other day. Not that I was in China the other day, but that I read an article from China. It says this: bar allows stressed out customers to beat up the staff. It's from Nanjing. A new bar in Nanjing, capital of East China's Jiangsu province, is offering an outlet for the stresses and strains of modern life. Customers will be able to pay money to beat up staff, smash glasses, shout and scream, and if these anger management techniques don't work, receive psychological counseling. I think they have it backwards, but I'm just saying. The owner of the bar is Wu Gong, said he got his inspiration from similar bars in Japan, but he felt a personal need for the type of service after his experiences as a migrant worker. The bar employs 20 models, well-built men in their 20s and 30s who are available to be hit. Customers can specify how they want the models to appear and then give them a sound beating. So you can have the models dress up as your boss, your coworker, your friend, whoever you want, and then you can go in and wail on them. Gave me a great idea this week. Cal's gone, but when he gets back, I'm going to pitch it to him as a ministry of the church. We can have different pastoral staff just put on, like, shoulder pads and helmets. And if you're angry, you can just come in next week, and we'll put you in a room, and you can beat up different staff members. And then you'll feel better. And I don't think Cal will like that idea. I don't think I would like that idea. I don't think my colleagues would like that idea. The other kind of anger, that's the outward kind. The other kind is internal. Some angry people keep their anger bottled up inside, and so on the outside, they may smile and laugh and pretend that everything's all right, but their inner dialogue is full of venom. We call these people passive-aggressive. You know what I mean by that, don't you? Passive-aggressive? Passive-aggressive behavior is calculated to appear innocent, but really is an attempt to stick it to the other person. I think we have all exhibited passive-aggressive behavior at some time or another. Put their place in this scenario. You know where the road is two lanes and then it's reducing to one? And let's say it's all reducing to the left lane, and so you dutifully get over in the left lane and you're in the line of cars. And then there's this joker who thinks somehow he has the divine right to stay in the right lane until the cones. So he just goes whipping by all the other cars up the right-hand side, and at the last minute, then he expects you to let him in after he's just skipped over the whole line. And being a good citizen, you do what you're supposed to do in that situation. You put your nose of your car as close to the bumper of the car in front of you as you possibly can. Okay? That's fine. No judgments there. And then you do the passive-aggressive thing. You see him out of the corner of your eye, but you don't look. You know what I'm saying. The guy's sitting there, and he's hungry. He wants in, and you just pretend you don't even see him. But inside, you're thinking, aha, take that! And you feel really good for a couple minutes. See, passive-aggressive husbands, when they're angry, they leave the toilet seat up at night. Passive-aggressive wives, maybe they park their car really close to the center line in the garage so that when he gets home from work, it's really difficult to get out of his car. Passive-aggressive coworkers, they take the last cup of coffee and they don't make more just to stick it to you. See, the problem with either response, whether we yell and scream or throw a fit or hit stuff or whatever, or the other side where we act passive-aggressively, the problem is, neither one of them really works. Neither one of them really works. I mean, we may feel better about ourselves for a short time. We may feel that we really stuck it to them. We may feel good about that for just a minute. But it doesn't reduce the anger threshold. It doesn't do anything to address the hurt in my life. And so all it is a temporary vent until if all I do is smash the inanimate objects in my life, I'm going to have the need to smash something else later in the day. It doesn't really solve the anger issue in my life, and it's falling apart even more. It doesn't get there. Because if anger is really the response to hurts in my life, I've got to deal with the hurts. And so that's decent psychology, I guess. Anger is a response to hurt, and that the way to resolve and lower our anger threshold is to deal with the hurts. But let me suggest this morning that the way of Jesus is even more difficult than monitoring and managing my hurts. This morning, I want to look after the real issue of reducing my anger threshold. Not just managing it, not just managing the outburst, not just taming the temper, but going deeper and taking care of the real root causes, the real anger threshold. So I want you to look up on the screens. I'm going to read two passages of scriptures with you. One is from Jesus and the other is from Paul. And I just want you to read both. We're going to read both of them and then make a couple comments about them. You have heard that our ancestors, Jesus said, were told, you must not murder. If you commit murder, you are subject to judgment. But I say, if you are even angry with someone, you are subject to judgment. If you call someone an idiot, you are in danger of being brought before the court. And if you curse someone, you are in danger of the fires of hell. So, if you are presenting a sacrifice at the altar in the temple, and you suddenly remember that someone has something against you, leave your sacrifice there at the altar. Go and be reconciled to the person, then come and offer your sacrifice to God. And when you are on the way to court with your adversary, settle your differences quickly. Otherwise, your accuser may hand you over to the judge, who will hand you over to an officer, and you will be thrown into prison. And if that happens, you surely won't be free again until you have paid the last penny. And then the Apostle Paul says this: get rid of all bitterness, rage, anger, harsh words, and slander, as well as all types of evil behavior. Instead, be kind to each other, tender-hearted, forgiving one another, just as God, through Christ, has forgiven you. Let's track the progression of thought here for just a minute. Jesus, like he often does in his teaching, just throws out this really radical idea that to his original audience would have sounded really extreme, like it does to us. If we were to make a list of sins here this morning, I'm sure most of us would probably put murder pretty high on our list of the worst sins. Most of us probably would also follow up with adultery or something along those lines. We'd probably somewhere on that top list talk about idolatry, worshiping idols and things like that is pretty high on the list of sins. But I would suggest this morning that probably almost none of us in this room would put anger as very high up on the list of the worst kinds of sins. But what Jesus says in here is he says, listen, if you're angry, the idea here is that the heart... Jesus isn't just worried about the actions. He's not worried about if I actually go out and kill somebody. He's saying, what's going on inside of you? What's your anger threshold? Don't be angry. Deal with the anger inside. Jesus is not just harping on the word idiot. Some translations translate that fool or other things. But what I think Jesus is getting after is this idea that this person is so full of anger that their anger threshold is really high and they've reduced themselves to muttering. I don't know if you mutter things like, the cashier can't even count change. Or what's the waitress doing? I wanted this medium rare and it's medium. Or whatever your muttering is. Muttering on the, I don't know if you mutter while you drive. I'll admit, I mutter when I drive sometimes. And Jesus is saying what's happened is the anger is building up in such a way that it's spilling out and we're calling people idiot. And then Jesus goes on to make the point that the idea of anger is if I'm going to resolve this, I've got to be reconciled to the people that I feel angry against. And so the first example he uses, he says, listen, if you're worshiping, I want to put this in our context. If you're worshiping and you're standing here in your seat and we're doing the songs and you're praising God and you realize that you have a problem with somebody or there's an issue with somebody else in this room, he says the most important thing you can do at that point is not to keep on worshiping and hope that it goes away, but to go get that person and take that person out in the lobby and be reconciled to that person. Get things right with that person, and then you can worship God. Jesus says, that's the most important thing. Get reconciled. Then he goes on and says, hey, if you're in business and you find yourself going to court because of an anger dispute and you're all upset and your adversary, your enemy's there, he says, listen, get it reconciled as fast as you can so you don't have to go through the court process. Because if you go through the court process, Jesus is so practical, I love it. He says, if you go through the court process, there's a chance that you're going to lose. And if you lose, you're going to be bound to this thing for a long time until you've paid it all back. And Jesus says, that's not the way. Be reconciled. Deal with it. Deal with the anger. Don't just keep on shoving it inside and blowing up here and there. Deal with the anger issues. But Jesus doesn't exactly lay out a plan for that. That's okay. Paul follows that up for us. And I just want to hit back to Paul. There, it's on the screen still. Paul says, get rid of bitterness. Instead, be kind to each other, tenderhearted, forgiving one another, just as God, through Christ, has forgiven you. Here is perhaps, to me, one of the most challenging aspects of what it means to be a Christian. One of the most challenging things about what it means to be a Christian, and that is that the way out of hurt and shame and pain and the cycle of anger really has nothing to do with the other person, and it has everything to do with me, and that I forgive. That the way of Jesus is the way of forgiveness. It isn't rocket science. I don't think anybody is sitting there in their seat going, whoa, that's so profound. I didn't know that Christianity was about forgiving people. But the issue is that it's so hard for us to do in our daily lives. It's so hard as we navigate stuff of life just to forgive people and to let it go. But that's the idea of forgiveness. Forgiveness is letting it go. It's letting go of my need for revenge. I let go of my need to be paid back. I let go of my desire to see that person hurt like I've hurt. Forgiveness is the idea that I let it all go. Every bit of it. Now, don't go away this morning with some distorted, touchy-feely image of forgiveness. See, I think sometimes when we think about forgiveness, we fantasize about it, that I'm going to go meet with this person and I'm going to tell them how they wronged me. They're going to cry. We're going to hug. The birds are going to sing zippity-doo-dah. The sky's going to be blue and it's going to be springtime. And everything's going to be good forever and ever with this person again. But that's not really a biblical idea of forgiveness. See, in the Bible, the word the word for forgiveness in the original language really didn't have anything to do with how I felt about it. In fact, what it really was is more of a business term or a legal term. And the idea was, is that I choose to cancel a debt. I know someone that had some hospital bills and they couldn't really pay them, or things were pretty tight. And so he went into the hospital and he said, listen, things are really tight in my life right now. Here's my finances. Here's what I make. Here's how hard it's going to be. And I promise to pay you back, but it's going to take me a couple years to do this. And I'll pay you $20 a month until I can come up with more. And the hospital, one of the local hospitals, just said, we forgive part of the debt. So instead of owing us $3,000, make it $1,000. How's that? They canceled the debt. I'm sure that the hospital administrator was like, yes, we're going to lose $2,000 on this deal. I'm sure that wasn't the feeling. I'm sure that that guy didn't go home at the end of the day going, ha ha, that was fun. But he made a decision, in this case, to cancel the debt. And that's the language of the Bible, is that when we forgive somebody, we make a decision in our mind, a decision in our heart, that we don't hold it against them anymore. They don't owe us. Now, I don't want to be totally unrealistic here. I mean, you may be sitting in your seat saying to yourself, yeah, right, that's a really nice idea, but you can't even begin to understand the specifics of my situation. You don't even know the hurt that I have felt in my life. And that's true, I don't. I don't know your specifics, but I know my life. And I know that forgiveness is really hard. It really is. But I'm also convinced that the Bible teaches that it's the only way to see freedom. To forgive is the only way that I will ever see freedom in my life from the hurt and the pain and the feeling that other people owe me. And I also know that the choice to forgive isn't one that I make one time. Every single time those thoughts or those memories or those instances of hurt come back, I have to, in my mind, make the decision to let it go all over again. Again and again. Over and over and over. So this morning, what I want to do for just a couple minutes is I want to talk about a couple practical steps to go about the process of forgiving. Because you may be sitting here going, I have anger, I know that. Or maybe some of the hurts you feel and the anger you feel is real recent. You're going, this is really fresh, and I don't know how I'm going to get there. But I think there's some practical steps we can take. I told you about that book in the beginning, Andy Stanley's book, It Came From Within. He talks about four steps. I want you to take out your program if you have it, and if you have a pen. I want you to do these steps as I talk about them. I'm just going to give you a little bit of space as we work through this to do these steps. The first thing I want you to do is to identify your anger. And to do that this morning, what I want you to do is I want you to write down the person's initials on your program. Or if they're sitting next to you, make up a funny name for them that you know who you're talking about. If you don't have a pen, just put the person's image in your mind. See their face. I don't necessarily want you to think about where you blew your temper, but what is that deeper anger threshold? What's the person who, they're in your volcano, who's that person that really fires things up inside and starts creating the pressure? See, the first step in this process of forgiveness is we have to know what we're aiming at. I mean, I believe it when Jesus says, forgive us our sins as we forgive those who sin against us. But I think the point is here, that's nice in general, but we've got to get specific. When we're talking about specific instances of me forgiving, I've got to get really specific about who it is that I'm angry at. And so I want you just for a second to think about who that person is. The second step, Andy Stanley says, is to determine what is owed to you. To determine what is owed to you. This may be a little weird, and it's not necessarily rational. It might just be a feeling that you have or a sense that you have that, you know what, I feel like this person owes me this. This is what they owe back to me. And I just want to prime the pump a little bit and give you a couple of examples. Maybe it'll help you think in terms of what's owed to me. Maybe you have a lot of anger towards your spouse. And what you feel is owed to you is the hopes and the dreams that you had for your relationship. Maybe the person that you picture is your spouse, and you write there, I feel like what's owed to me is your participation in our relationship for the last 10 years. Or what I feel like is owed to me is your help in raising the kids. Or what I feel like is owed to me, whatever the situation for you is. Maybe it's your spouse. Maybe your anger goes back a few years and it's your parents' divorce from 30 years ago. And maybe you feel like you're owed a childhood, a normal childhood like the other kids. Instead of shuttling from one city to the next, back and forth, and never really feeling connected in either place, you feel like your parents owe you a childhood, or they owe you your innocence, or they owe you back all the years of the fighting. Maybe your anger is towards a friend who said some pretty harsh things to you, and you feel like from that person you're owed a friendship. Or maybe it's a marriage that went bad, or a dating relationship with bad, and you feel like you're owed the last year or years of your life back. And you're owed your heart back. Maybe your anger is towards a former business partner, and you really feel like they gypped you, and there's actually a monetary value that you can say, what's owed to me is this much and our friendship. It's hard work identifying and determining what is owed to us. But I think the reason that's important is because of the next step. If I'm ever going to forgive somebody, I've got to know exactly what I'm forgiving them. And then Andy Stanley says, and I know this sounds so simple, but then I make the choice to cancel the debt. I make the choice to cancel the debt. Somebody came up to me last night after the service and said, that seems so simplistic. But forgiveness as a concept is simplistic. It's just a really hard thing to do. It doesn't mean, I want to say to you this morning, it doesn't mean that you're not going to feel the hurt anymore. What it does mean is you're not going to hold it against the person anymore. They don't owe me. So if you're sitting there this morning saying, it's my parents' divorce a long time ago, it's to say, you know what? I can still feel the hurt from that. It still hurts, but they They don't owe me anything anymore for it. They don't owe me. And when they don't owe me, the reason to be angry is gone. Canceling the debt also doesn't mean that everything is necessarily all right with that person. If someone gypped you in a business, you can forgive the debt, you can cancel the debt, but it doesn't mean that you should go into business again with that person. That would just not be wise. It doesn't mean that if I say, hey, my kids don't owe me anything, it doesn't mean that I still don't discipline them. It just means that I choose not to hold it against them. Listen, if you're in an abusive situation, maybe you're in an abusive marriage. Forgiveness and canceling the debt doesn't mean that you allow them to keep hurting you. It doesn't mean that you don't call the cops. What it does mean is that you don't have the feeling anymore that they owe you, that somehow they must pay you back. The final thing Andy Stanley says we have to do is after we've identified it and after we've determined what's owed us and after we choose to cancel the debt, we have to dismiss the case. And I can't say it any better than he does, so I just want you to look at the screens and we're going to read what he says in his book. He says this: the final process centers on a daily decision not to reopen the case. What makes this so difficult is that our feelings don't automatically follow our decision to forgive. Besides, forgiving someone doesn't erase our memories. If we could forgive and forget, this whole thing would be a whole lot easier. But in most cases, no sooner have we forgiven than something happens to remind us of the offense all over again. And when our memories are triggered, the old feelings come flooding back. When the memories of past hurts flood your mind, go ahead and face them. Allow yourself to remember the incident. It's even okay to feel the emotions those memories elicit. But instead of reopening the case against your offender, take this opportunity to restate your decision. He or she doesn't owe me. So this is the challenge. If we're ever going to tame our tempers, if we're ever going to deal with the explosions of temper that I have in my life, I've got to deal with the anger threshold. And if I'm going to deal with the anger threshold, I've got to deal with the hurt. And I deal with the hurt by forgiving, by letting it go. They don't owe me anymore. Just one last thought. Forgiveness is incredibly hard work. It's not simple. It's not easy. As we just said, it's not something you do one time and you're done with. It's something you're going to have to do over and over. Probably make a daily decision in your life that when this offense comes up again, I will choose to not hold it against them anymore. They don't owe me. But frankly, the way of Jesus is usually hard because it means fighting against all the instincts inside of me. Because the instincts inside of me want to lash out and yell and scream and blow up in rage and get even with the people who hurt me. I want to go back to Paul's words one last time because I want you to see this, how he finishes. He says, this is how I have the ability to do this, just as God, through Christ, has forgiven you. The idea is not that I just, under my own power, under my own strength, muster up the ability and forgive other people. Instead, it's this idea that I have the power to forgive because I'm in a relationship with Jesus. I have the power to forgive because I'm in a relationship with Jesus who forgave everything I ever did to him. He doesn't hold it against me anymore. And knowing that, I can allow myself to be held by him who didn't just forgive me, but he loves me and longs for me to bring those hurts to him and bring those offenses to him and allow myself to be held in his arms, to be held by him, and to not hold it against the people in my life. And when we choose to let it go,
when we choose to cancel the debt, we begin to know what it means to be held by Jesus. And to let Him take the hurts and Him take the anger away. And I believe that when that happens, what Jesus said about reconciliation then can begin to happen. Because I no longer look at those people and I'm not filled with rage towards the people. I begin to see their hurts. And I begin to see that the way that they act is out of their hurts. And I begin to feel something totally different. And God changes my life when I choose to let it go. Will you pray with me? Father, just help us. Life can really beat us up sometimes, and it's really hard. And God, some of the hurts that we feel in this room are really deep. And to let them go is a lot harder than just saying three words. And it's going to be days and weeks of years of saying over and over again, I choose to cancel the debt. But God, I pray that when we do that, when we have the courage to forgive the debt, to cancel the debt, God, I pray that we will know what it means to be held by You. That we will know You in a greater way than we ever have before. And that we will be reconciled. And we ask it in Your name. Amen. Have a great week.